The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Kurt Benrood from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sci-Fi. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Daily Sci-Fi. Note, our first story is made available courtesy of Asimov's Science Fiction.
Peter Wood, an attorney in Raleigh, North Carolina, hopes that in the far future we have moved past business retreats and conferences. If not, the poor souls conducting team-building exercises on an interstellar ship might actually welcome a little change of pace, similar to the title of this piece, Riverboats, Robots, and Ransom in the Regular Way, by Peter Wood, read by Rebecca Bloom, Seth Bloom, and Lucinda Gainey.
The starship slammed out of hyperdrive, throwing Maggie to the floor. She had no idea what had happened, but at least the active listening exercise was over. God, she hated corporate retreats. A plastic Tiffany lamp, part of the Queen of the Milky Way's antebellum riverboat theme, flew off a table. Snacks slid from the faux wood saloon bar, covering the floor with cookies, dips, crackers, and the still untouched vegetable platter. Only Chip, the concierge robot for the leased ship, and the only employee of the cruise company on board, seemed unconcerned. Wearing an 1840s suit and bow tie, he sat on a bar stool and casually flipped through a copy of Huckleberry Finn. Maggie rose and leaned against a framed print of a parasoled Southern Belle.
What's going on, Chip?
Chip rolled his eyes and closed the book. It's pretty obvious. We're caught in a tractor beam. Just look outside. Maggie ran to the porthole. A massive cruiser, double the size of the Queen, eased alongside. It had a football-sized field, skull and crossbones painted across its bow. An hour later, Juanita, Maggie's supervisor, addressed the assembled employees in the lounge.
I don't have much to say except that we've been captured by some sort of pirates. But you already knew that. The retreat is suspended. The communication system doesn't work, so we can't call for help. Our employers don't know what's happened.
You really think they'd care?
She bit into a stale prune Danish. She wished her tight-fisted employer had paid for the upgrade to the premier larder.
I'm sure they'd do something.
There was a scattering of laughter. Wearing a bowler hat, Chip pretended to play a very un-antebellum ragtime at a chintzy-looking player piano. Juanita cleared her throat.
What do you think, Chip?
Chip looked up from the sheet music. My primary duty is to protect the ship. My secondary duty is to ensure the safety of the passengers. Ideally, both the ship and the passengers can be saved. Juanita frowned and looked at the robot.
That's ridiculous.
Look at your contract.
I thought the passengers came first,
Maggie said.
What about the Asimovian laws?
Bad for business, Chip said, and returned to his book. A view screen popped out of the top of the piano. Nothing appeared. Chip swore loudly and jumped up. He kicked the piano so hard the instrument shook. The screen sputtered to life and showed a middle-aged man standing in front of maybe 50 people. Only the discreet Jolly Roger on the label of his gray uniform identified him as a pirate. His looks were fading a bit, but Maggie suspected he had probably been quite the ladies' man back in the day. He scratched his unshaven chin. I am First Officer Kramer of the ship Revenge. You are our prisoners. Our captain will now address you. The man next to Kramer resembled a chorus member from a bad high school production of the Pirates of Penzance. He wore a bright gold blazer with oversized buttons. White epaulets graced his shoulders. He bowed.
I am Captain Lannister. I need to speak to your captain about the terms of your surrender.
In the background, Kramer moved out of sight and returned a moment later with a large mug. He opened up a plastic creamer and dumped it into his drink. Chip walked over to the bakery items and picked up a small computer. Mumbling to himself, he began taking inventory of the muffins, pastries, and cookies. Juanita finally broke the ensuing silence.
I'm Juanita Murray.
The captain frowned.
Captain Murray?
We don't have a captain. we leased from Quasar. The ship's automated. We have no crew, just the leasing company's robot.
The captain gave a dry little laugh.
I see.
Juanita nudged the robot.
Chip, come on.
Chip put down a half-empty box of bagels and sighed. He spoke in a monotone.
I am the robot responsible for the safety of the ship.
Look, I don't care who's running things, but we'll let you live if you give us your ship, the captain said. We'll drop you off on a neutral world unharmed after you pay us a certain transport charge. Don't expect rescue out here. You're light years from any patrols.
Sir, you cannot have the ship, Chip said.
Then all the passengers will die.
The passengers are not my concern.
Juanita stared at the robot.
What the hell are you trying to do, Chip?
Don't play games with me, the captain said.
Sir, your ship lacks the ability to harm ours. You can only block our distress calls and immobilize us, Chip said.
We'll wait you out, the captain said.
Chip shrugged. You'll run out of food eventually, and everybody needs food. Except me. Maggie heard the airlock open. She looked up from the dry-as-dust stack of galactic economic reports she was supposed to summarize for work. Even on a so-called retreat. Even in a hostage situation. Juanita stormed into the cafeteria. She ripped a poster for the retreat off the wall and threw it on the ground. She glared at Chip, who was typing into his ever-present computer at the remains of the breakfast bar.
Just give the pirates the ship, you bastard.
Chip continued taking inventory. Great, he muttered. All the bacon's gone. They can eat tofu for the rest of the trip.
You heard me,
Juanita repeated. Chip shrugged. If you don't like it here, leave.
Why don't you leave?
Juanita snapped. You think I want to stay? I'm programmed not to abandon the ship. Besides, only humans can activate life pods, Chip said.
God.
Juanita turned to Maggie.
Where in the hell did a bunch of shiver-me-timbers pirates get the idea that we have money?
Maybe they think the company will pay.
She tried to ignore the nausea-inducing hollow images of the Mississippi River behind Juanita. The flickering effects did little to convince anyone the cafeteria was actually the deck of a 19th-century paddle-wheeler. Juanita snorted.
Our employer? Right.
She ran her fingers through short gray hair.
I need your help, Maggie. You're the only person not acting like a drunken college student.
The rest of the employees were getting drunk in the lounge.
What do you want me to do?
We should have a face-to-face with their captain and his first officer. Maybe we can convince them that we can't afford any ransom.
The furious look she gave Chip could have drilled a hole right through him.
We sure can't reason with our concierge.
Maggie held up a tax analysis.
I'm kind of busy.
I didn't sign up for this either.
Juanita was breathing hard.
You think this crap-hole cruise was my idea?
Okay, I'll go.
I will accompany you, Chip said.
Juanita blinked.
Why?
You will not bargain with my ship. The pirates will also need their robot at any negotiations.
There's two of you?
Maggie asked.
Yes, Chip said. Their ship has the same model as me. It will be good to compare notes.
The pirate captain and Kramer exited the airlock. Their silver robot looked exactly like Chip, except he wore knee-high black boots, a billowy white shirt, and a crimson headscarf. His name was Scallywag. The two robots eyed each other but said nothing.
I want coffee, the captain proclaimed. Where does Kramer need to go to fetch me a cup?
I'll take Officer Kramer to the cafeteria.
Kramer shot the captain an irritated look. How do you want your coffee, Captain? With nutmeg? The captain nodded.
Of course.
When he and Kramer were out of earshot, Maggie cut to the chase.
We don't have any money.
No kidding. You think I didn't try telling that to my captain? Kramer said. He listens to Scallywag. Not that he has much choice. Robot's always looking out for Quasar.
Quasar?
Maggie held up her hand.
You're leasing from Quasar Rentals, too?
Everybody uses those bastards, Kramer said.
How can one Quasar ship hold another Quasar ship hostage?
He made a face like a mother might give a child who can't fathom why he has to go to bed. Quasar lives for these situations. The ships get returned late, customers violate leases, the company cleans up. They'd love it if we were stuck out here for months racking up late fees and penalties. Maggie was skeptical.
Why do y'all take ships hostage, then?
We used to have a good business plan. Low ransoms, quick turnarounds, volume, you know? Then we started having these stalemates. And our captain takes the pirate thing way too seriously, he laughed. He was a bad manager, too.
Manager?
Singularity Payday Loan outsourced their IT department to Omicron 6. We had to do something.
They came to the cafeteria. Kramer picked up a poppy seed muffin and took a bite.
God, this is worse than our food.
He plunked the muffin on the metal table. Maggie pointed to the locked larder.
There's better food in there, but it costs extra.
We have a premium larder, too. He stooped down and examined the pulsating locks to the food stores. I could open this.
How?
I'm good at figuring out systems like that. I was an IT guy, remember? Maggie filled a metal carafe with lukewarm coffee.
I'm not sure where the nutmeg is.
Forget the nutmeg. He's lucky I don't put cayenne in his coffee. Kramer sat in a cracked plastic chair that tried to mimic 19th century rattan. I really need a better job.
Fantastic, Chip said, when the two robots ran to the corner and saw Maggie and Kramer. You've gotten into the cookies. More inventory.
He shuffled over to the empty coffee maker.
I have to brew coffee, too?
He let out a stream of profanity. Maggie pointed to the carafe.
There's some here. It's cold.
Chip snatched the coffee.
You both work for the same company, don't you?
Maggie asked. Chip stared at her. What's your point?
Why not just release the ships?
They haven't paid the ransom, Scallywag said.
We don't have any friggin' money. Have you seen my credit card bill?
We don't believe you, Scallywag said. We are prepared to...
Maggie's voice rose.
Well, I don't believe you. Lay off the everybody's going to die except me crap.
I never said that, Scallywag said. But it's true.
Maggie heard laughing and singing. The party was leaving the lounge and moving to the cafeteria.
To the cookies, somebody shouted.
A ponytailed accountant joined Maggie, Kramer, and the robots.
Hey, man, he slurred. We're hungry.
You'll have to eat what's left of the breakfast buffet, Chip said.
Eyes bloodshot, the man studied the stale toast and remnants of fruit compote. He patted his sizable gut.
Nah, I'm thinking pizza. Maybe a Reuben and fries.
I do not prepare sandwiches, Chip snorted.
A chorus of drunken sailors spilled into the cafeteria. A dozen very intoxicated retreat participants stumbled inside.
Flip's not helping us,
the accountant said to the fellow revelers.
It's Chip, the robot said.
We're starving, man,
somebody said. Chip tapped his computer.
You can go into the premier larder if you fill out a few forms and accept liability, and I'll need a major credit card.
I'm not giving you my Visa card,
the accountant said.
We don't take Visa. Chip set the computer down.
They don't need to sign anything. Stop jerking them around.
The accountant seemed lost in thought. Then he stumbled toward the premier larder.
No, Chip blocked his way. I need the forms and that credit card. We only take Discover.
If we can't afford the ransom, what makes you think we can afford the premier larder?
That's not my problem, Chip said.
We don't take credit cards, Scallywag said. Only cash, commodities, and starships.
There had to be a way out of the stalemate. An idea hit her. She kicked Kramer's chair and whispered,
You think we could get rid of the robots?
Kramer cocked an eyebrow. How do you propose we do that?
Let's throw them out of an airlock.
We'll need help. Maggie stood on a rickety chair and raised her voice.
How'd everybody like it if Kramer and I whipped up some Reubens and fries?
She wasn't much of a cook, but maybe this would motivate the drunks.
He's not even a cook, the accountant pointed at Kramer. The dude's a pirate, man.
Yeah, but he can get into the premier locker.
Kramer walked over to the premier locker. He pulled a pulsating device about the size of a pen from his pocket. He leaned over, blocking everybody's view of what he was doing to the lock. Like Alibaba's cave, the massive steel doors to the premier locker opened. Inside were gleaming metal shelves, stocked with all manner of food. 20-foot-high industrial freezers and refrigerators hid who-knew-what culinary treasures.
Now you're talking, man,
the accountant said. And as quickly as Kramer had opened the doors, Chip slammed them shut,
not without the paperwork and a credit card.
You're a jerk,
the accountant said. Chip walked over to a shelf and took down several drums of shrimp and grits. The accountant scowled.
Man, we can't be eating that canned crap again.
Maggie's stomach lurched. Chip had served the congealed goop two nights in a row.
Chip, no. Oh, for the love of God, no.
It will go nicely with pimento loaf and that leftover toast from breakfast.
Aw, man, the accountant whined.
If you want something better, we're going to have to do something about the robots,
Maggie said to the crowd.
Robots,
the accountant said.
We don't need no stinking robots, man.
5 minutes later, alarms wailed. The drunks sang, What do you do with a jackass robot? And forced Chip and Scallywag into the only open life pod. Maggie pressed her hand against the release sensor. The Queen jettisoned the emergency vessel out into space. Chip wouldn't be going down with the ship this time.
You did what?
Juanita closed her eyes and massaged her temples.
Good Lord. Now we don't have a pilot.
We didn't have one before. Chip just read books. The computer system flew the ship.
I can fly the ship, Kramer said. It's not hard.
We're leaving as soon as we get the ransom, the captain said. And where's my coffee?
Juanita rolled her eyes.
Why can't you all just go away?
Kramer turned to the captain. They don't have any money. And the company won't pay up. You know how corporations think. You ever try to get reimbursed from our old boss for mileage for our meals?
I could never figure out the forms, the captain said.
Kramer stared at the captain. Just cut your losses before the crew mutinies. The captain was silent for a moment and then said,
We could accomplish much without that robot. Let's go, Kramer.
I'm staying. The two argued for several minutes. Kramer was unpersuaded by the captain's pleas to honor the pirate code. Kramer clearly hated his job. Finally, the captain stormed down the hallway toward the airlock and waiting shuttle.
Buffoon, Kramer said.
Maggie was not unhappy Kramer was staying. He was the most interesting guy she'd met in months. He was intelligent, funny, and didn't let anyone push him around. And he was pretty good looking. Juanita flipped a switch on the communication system.
Message coming from the life pod.
The unmistakable smug voice of Chip crackled through a wall speaker. Didn't mean to be so unreasonable, but Scallywag and I really needed a vacation. Thanks for the pod.
I think we could engage the autopilot and rescue you,
Juanita said. Raucous laughter was the only response from the robots.
Where are you going?
Maggie asked.
I reckon I got to light out for the territory.
Territory? What territory?
Juanita stared at the screen.
The life pod just vanished.
Kramer studied the readout. It switched into hyperdrive.
I thought life pods didn't have hyperdrive.
You mean they're not supposed to, Kramer said. He squinted at the screen. Damn, those robots are good. They fried the autolog. Nothing recorded after they left the ship. There's probably no way Quasar can find them, he laughed. Or us, for that matter. Maggie dropped the mostly unread reports in the trash can by the premier locker.
I won't be needing these. We're all fired.
Kramer took a sip from his Spock IPA microbrew.
What?
Maggie sat down across from him.
Corporate just sent Juanita a message. The retreat was just an excuse to get us off world for a few days so they could shut down the department.
Sounds familiar, Kramer said. Maggie knew that she should be furious, but getting fired was also liberating. Maybe the rogue robots had taught her to take advantage of opportunities.
Juanita's telling everybody right now.
Do you know what Chip meant about the territory? Kramer asked. Maggie shook her head. It's from Huckleberry Finn, Kramer said. After Huck helps the slave Jim escape, he's tired of so-called civilization. He wants to run away to the lawless west.
Wow.
Kramer was well-read, too. He just keeps getting better. Our book club read Huckleberry Finn last year.
I want to run away. We could fly around for months.
Maggie leaned forward.
We can blame the pirates for the robots leaving.
She was in no hurry to return to her sleeping cube in the decrepit Raleigh high-rise.
We can sue the hell out of my old boss for the kidnapping.
The standoff only lasted a day.
We could say we were held hostage for months with the computer fried. We can go on a real cruise.
She sighed.
Who am I kidding? Quasar will just track us down, probably arrest us.
Kramer gave her a wry smile. If only you knew somebody with the IT skills to disable the tracking signal. Maybe even send out a bogey beacon with false readings. The beacon could zip in and out of wormholes for months. The sort of thing that would keep Quasar busy. Maggie grinned.
If only.
Kramer held out a beer. John Carter read. Maggie raised her microbrew.
To the territory.
This is Christopher Bynum. I'm reading Heart Quest by Drew Rogers. She sits in the same tree every day at lunch, feet dangling from the edge of her wooden defense tower behind the kickball courts. I stay off the blacktop as I make my way around, away from the big kids, not wanting to draw enemy attention as I approach her. This mission requires my uninterrupted attention and expert knowledge in treaty tactics. My new shoes alone make me more prepared than the last time I was on this quest. +5 charm, plus 5 spirit, plus 10 agility. But I also carry a secret weapon, which I keep hidden in the back pocket of my jeans. Like the Obsidian Crusader said in Night Golems, The Stone War,
"When attempting to make allies with an unfamiliar faction, show confidence, show charisma. Show something you have that is super awesome."
Hi, Aberdeen, I say, stepping across the grass, close but not so close that I put myself at risk of her launching an assault. Aberdeen lifts her head from her book, Dragon Bones, the Ancient and Arcane. I know it well. She looks at me, her crystal blue stare like that of a frost wizard. Two brilliant glaciers that turn me to ice. She says, "Hi," back, and I thaw out. Suddenly I realize I've come unprepared. I have nothing to offer her other than the secret weapon, but I can't use that yet. Patience is key. She must first show interest, lower the drawbridge. "I've read that book 4 times," I say, feeling exposed, defenseless. "I've read it 5, she says. "This is my 6th. Her retainer shimmers when she says 6th, a no doubt purposeful flourish. Gah! Brains and beauty! Then it occurs to me that she doesn't need any allies. She could control any realm, the multiverse if she wanted, by simply exposing her teeth. Aberdeen closes her book and sets it on the branch, letting me know that I have her attention, if only for a moment. She tucks a strand of hair behind her ear, gleaming threads of red-orange sunlight, spun by tiny fire sprites. "My dad said I should invite you to my birthday party on Saturday," I surprise myself, firing the words up at her without hesitation. She casts a deflection spell, says, "I have to go to my grandma's this weekend," effectively dodging my invitation. It lands somewhere in the grass beyond her timber tower, burrows underground, and stays there, refusing to come back out. Aberdeen starts whistling at birds perched high in the tree, her winged protectors ready to swoop down and carry me away to her command. It's quiet for too long, and I'm out of ideas. It's all or nothing. I pull the secret weapon from my pocket and I hold it up, a level 200 dragon strike, not aimed at her but at the sky, a fiery proposition to become allies. "You said Klinkhammer was your favorite." A holographic goblin, General Klinkhammer, my rarest card, but a small price to pay for her alliance. I wiggle it so she can see that it's a foil. "Nice," she says. "I have a holo too, first edition." Plan fail. I pocket the card, trying to play it off like I hadn't been offering it to her as a gift, but I feel no less defeated. Mine isn't a first edition.
"Nice shoes, dork."
The earth shudders, and I cringe slightly at the armor-piercing voice that comes from behind me.
"Did your mommy pick those out for you?"
Great. Bum-rushed by an opposing faction. I turn to the 20-foot-tall beast boy standing there, kick myself for letting my guard down and not watching my own back. "Yeah," I say, because she did, and because I don't know how else to respond, "for my birthday." Enemy stares me down, kick ball in one hand and my pride in the other. I feel like running. Then Aberdeen hops down from her branch.
"Whoa, cool shoes," she says. "Those are just like Reggie's hyperspeed boots from Amazing Undercover Middle School Superheroes, Episode 7.
Her words, though tonally soft and sweet like a siren song, squelch the invader like a banshee scream. His mouth opens and closes a few times, but he's unable to speak. Utterly spell-silenced. "Yeah," I say. I turn one foot to the side so she can really see the coolness of them, pressing my shoe into the grass. My heel lights up. Her face lights up.
"Whoa," she says. "I bet you can run as fast as Rapid Reggie. Want a race to the swings?"
My shoe boosters activate. I waste no time getting a head start. We're rushing to the jungle gym, our paths igniting in flame as we leave our enemy behind. She's ultra-fast, but I get to the swing set a nanosecond before she does. I'm out of breath, but she knows my power, my awesome speed.
"Come on," my new ally says.
Then she takes my hand in hers, and for a second I think this may have been a trick, because I feel, a powerful conflagration spell warming inside my chest. Any moment now, I'll surely burst into flame.
This story is Adventuring by Jennifer R. Donahue. Sometimes you can stop to breathe. Sometimes you repack that worn leather pack which has been with you longer than any companion and find the detritus from when you started, from before you bled so much, from when you were just goofing off in an inn or at a trail marker. A whetstone from before you had a magical sword which never needs honing. That last bottle of lamp oil, a forgotten healing potion, always a fortuitous find. Cheap trail ration, long hardened beyond edible use. The dog-eared book you meant to keep a diary in, or write letters home, maybe on holidays. Did you ever return home? Not even for a visit. Why adventure? It's better somehow than farming, than working at a tavern, than entering a monastic order. Not everyone good at fighting wants to be a gladiator. Not every man is good at fighting, or woman good at cooking. Adventuring is what you do when you don't fit in. Find your fortune on the road. Satisfy your inquisitive nature in dusty hallways of ruins nobody even tells ghost stories about any longer. It's strangely easy to find companions. The mage who couldn't stand to sit in the library all the time. The questing knight proving some point or another for his god. You stopped listening when you saw the too fervent gleam in his eye. Sometimes those hallways were meant to stay forgotten. The things a careless hand might awaken were meant to stay lost, stay locked away. You tear a page from the book and write a letter now to your companions. The mage made sure everybody knew how to read, a way of passing the time while traveling or while snowbound or while waiting for a particular lunar event to take place. You hope they don't find the letter until it's too late to stop you. There are some jobs meant for just one person, and some lives better lived by others. You can't claim to have been the most noble, the most pious, but this last enemy, well, it's you they want, and they'll never get anybody else again. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sci-Fi. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Kurt Benrood, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sci-Fi is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.